From Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars. I can never get this camera right. Constantly moving, I guess. I gotta put a piece of tape or something. Okay, there we go. I think yes, we're okay. How's everybody doing out there? Where have I been? Oh, do I got stories for you as always. I don't know where to start. To be perfectly honest with you. Turn this down. I always have Safety FM going in the background. Right? And you too can have Safety FM going into the background. Over at safetyfm.com. So, anyway, that's what's going on. And why am I getting feedback? I can run back. Because we're on that. How about now? Does that sound any clearer? We're getting there. Believe me, we're getting there. At least I have the board on record, so you may not hear anything. Now, in case we have problems here, normally we have stuff on the... Oh, hold on. Okay, there we go. Yeah, luckily I have the board on record, so we'll end up doing it. I'll put that in podcast. Maybe edit it a little bit for the podcast and everything else. We had a situation over the weekend. All right, huge. And I'm starting out with this because it... I had a little bit of a medical emergency yesterday. What we ended up doing was on I won't go into all the details, but on Saturday, I got into a little bit of an argument with a bee's nest. I don't know what the species was. Definitely a bee. They were about yay long with no striped and everything else. So what happened was I was walking on a deck or a floating dock, and apparently the bees had made a nest under the dock and were using the gaps in between the boards as an exit. And I'm walking there, and I didn't see this because how could you see it? Been walking the same dock for almost 50 years here. No, 45, yeah, like 46 years. Going on 47 years, never had a problem. We had what we call Jersey spiders, right? They're about like that, and striped legs. And, they leave you alone for the most. Or you leave them alone, they leave you alone. Everybody's happy, everybody, and everything else. So what I ended up doing was this. I got 10 bee stings in immense pain. But I didn't think anything. I'm not quote-unquote allergic to bees, but just because you're not allergic to bees doesn't mean that you can't be have a reaction to a bee sting. So, hold on. Let me Google this real quick. So this is basically what happened. I was in pain. One of my ankles swelled up a little bit, right? There was a little bit of swell. I had a little bit of a, upon exertion, a little bit of, out of breath, that sort of thing. So I'm trying to be nice here and medical, right? I couldn't freaking breathe so good, you know, but I didn't think anything of it. No, I said, okay, well, this might happen, blah, 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 blah. And so Saturday night, I thought I took out all the stingers. My daughter, Jessica, who's like the arbiter of all things first aid in the house. No, she's helping me. She take it. Oh, okay. We got all the stingers. About two stingers, I guess I couldn't get out. About 1 o'clock in the morning, I mean, it was like, I was immense pain. It's like I had cigarette. Oh, am I allowed to say cigarettes anymore? It's like someone was doing like a cigarette, but in my ankle, one in each ankle. And ended up getting the stingers out. I guess that meant they were there. Took some antihistamine, some Tylenol. No, and I have ice, and you know, okay, I think I'm okay. Sunday, I'm not in really pain. No, a little bit of itchy, and then Monday, I guess I'm a little bit. Hey, I'm not right since this happened. So yesterday, I write an email over to my doctor, and phenomenal doctor, no nonsense. You know, like you have to have someone no nonsense to deal with me. And she emails me back yesterday afternoon, right? I emailed her Tuesday morning. She emails me back and she calls and she says, Jimmy, are you still having symptoms? I said, yeah, I took some over-the-counter antihistamine every night, blah, blah, blah. No, I can't take it during the day because it knocks me out. I really can't function. Oh, she said, oh, okay, Jimmy. Okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to urgent care, and if you can't get to urgent care, you're going to the emergency room because you may be having a heart cardiac event here because you're a little bit out of breath and, you know, with your family history and everything. Yeah, just go over there. So I end up in urgent care for like 3 hours. You know, I got a, you know, the person came in there. Good guy, you know, he got the EKG going, you know, eventually. But, you know, I'm used to going to, like, my regular doctor and, you know, for my annual physical or if I have to go for a hazmat physical. You know, the physical is over with and, you know, they hook you up on the EKG. It's like a two-minute thing, boom, boom, boom. Now, this was like a long, drawn-out process. Well, Mr. Posel, can you shave your chest for us? And, okay, you know, whatever. And it goes, and everything turns out, okay, I get all these pills and everything else. They send me home with over-the-counter antihistamine and some anti-itch cream. And the doctor says at the urgent care, hey, Mr. Posel, I said, you call me Jim. He says, okay, well, Mr. Posel, what do you want? I said, I want the strongest shit that you got. That's what I want. I want the maximum dose of everything you prescribe. Okay. So we go in there and, you know, we get everything and we're feeling better today. We're on the mend. Anyway, this is what's going on. So that's why I wasn't on the air yesterday. I was all ready to go because I do have a lot of stuff to say today and it may not be nice. Now, if you follow me on the socials, Facebook, I basically put everything public on there, right? Oh, well, let me back up. So getting back to this V-bite, right? I do first aid CPR training. I'll share the story from now on, right? Basically what the doctor has told me and what I've read online, a severe allergic reaction, you know, could cause like a sudden cardiac arrest, which may require CPR, AED, that sort of thing. Someone may have an epinephrine auto injector for that. You know, use things that, if you have a prescription or, you know, in accordance to what your medical person says. The other thing is this, if you are getting, like I did, like a swarm of bees, I got attacked by, right? And I got all these bites and everything else. unless you get like one bite and you're not, you know, if you get one bite, okay, you take care of it. Normally that's, you don't have to go to the doctor unless you're allergic or you have, but you should if you're concerned or anything like that. Let me make it clear. But if, no, you can't, the doctor's like, you got 10 bee bites, dude. Go to the hospital. What's wrong with you? You know, like, you know, right? Sort of thing. So that's a lesson learned. Not something I want to relive again. I hadn't been done like that. And the doctor says to me yesterday, Mr. Polzel, when was the last time you had stung by more than one bee? I said, well, I was about 8 years old, and I got 6 bee bites in my ears. I said, yeah, like President Trump, you know, and I, you know, but I'm not making a joke here. But, you know, like President Trump. No, and I said, I tell you what, that man was in a lot of freaking pain because anything to the ear like that on the top of the ear, like I got with a bee bite and he got with a bullet, it's kind of, it's painful. Believe me. So this is a segue here. And as usual, it's our policy on this program, we do not give political endorsements, at least not yet. I don't ever plan on doing it. You know, I'm going to trust the listeners. I think the listeners know my opinion. My friends know my opinion. I attend one political meeting a month. It's scheduled. Most of the time I don't get there. And it's usually an educational meeting with a group that I'm involved in. You know, that's it. So I'm not giving an endorsement. I'm not going out there saying, you know, vote for this guy, vote for that guy. Now, let me, or that person, or what have you, let me make it perfectly clear. We're going to talk about what happened this Saturday. You're going to say, well, Jimmy, you know, that's already been discussed. No, it hasn't. Not to my satisfaction. Now, there's some, Todd Conklin wrote a book back in a couple years back. You can look it up on the podcast. I will put the links when I post this to social media and LinkedIn. He wrote a book back in 2001, I believe it was. You could go on his episode, the Pre-Accident Investigation podcast by Todd Conklin. He's one of the progenitors of the whole human organizational performance thing. He doesn't like to take credit for it, right? And everything, okay, great. But he's been really a big supporter, big pusher on it. If you're interested, they're doing a Todd Conklin conference. I'll talk to Jay Allen, see if I could put some advertisements on here for this. But no, when the worst accident happens, right? And on earlier this year, April 1st, no fooling, I was on the PR podcast with my old teammate, Jody Fisher, great guy, PR podcast. And we talked about the Baltimore Bridge collapse. Now, there's four things that you need. Now, Todd Conklin said three. I came up with the fourth and with Jody Fisher, right? I can't really take credit, but I, like, you know, combined what he was said on a previous one of his podcasts and what Todd said. All right, so you need four. No, there, you need four things when you're communicating. So basically what the head of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, had said, right, she's the head. I don't know what, I'm going to assume the best, that they meant well and everything else. Everybody's above boards here and everybody's had the great intentions. That's more than what most people are giving her, right? And I think that she's being treated a little bit unfairly here. All right, and I'll go into that in a minute. And I know a lot of my friends on the right are going to be like, "Ah, you're talking, what are you talking about, blah, blah, blah." Well, I think this is what it comes down to, is this. You're involved in an emergency. You're in charge of giving a statement. First of all, I'm going to tell you, avoid giving statements to anybody, right? Especially with a lot of these OSHA stuff out there, depending on the locale you're in, and we learned this from Alec Baldwin. We learned this through many other cases out there. If you don't have to talk to these folks, don't talk to them. Don't do it. I'm going to tell you, the reporters are more articulate. They're smarter than most people, at least when it comes to explaining things and communication. And based on my research in this, I did my graduate school work on communicating environmental issues in the popular press and trying to develop an accuracy scale. This is what my conclusions were. Real simple. Usually, the soundbite or the story is written before the interview, right? Or at least where they want to go is written before the interview. And they're just looking for a person, a face, someone to attribute that to, right? That's often what happens, especially with emergencies and environmental issues and safety issues and everything. So we had people out there that already had what they wanted to do, and they went and they interviewed her. And she started talking and talking and talking and talking, and the more you talk, like we know on this program, the more you talk, the deeper a hole you dig for yourself. So what the, you know, so what's the combination? This is what it is. You go up there and you say, this is what we know. All right? This is what we know. Number two, this is what we don't know. Right? Number two. Number three, this is what we're going to find out. Right, that's number three. And number four is, this is who I am. This is not in any necessary order. So this would have been with a good thing. Let me improvise here. I'll do a little bit of improv. Hello, my name is Kimberly Cheadle. I am the head of the U.S. Secret Service. I have worked at the U.S. Secret Service. I worked there for 25 years. I was on the vice presidential detail when President Biden was vice president, and I stayed through the Trump administration. I had gone into private industry, a company you might have heard of, PepsiCo, based right over on the other side of the river here, right over in Westchester. Nice big campus there, beautiful place. And when I gave security there, to them, I was in charge of security. When President Biden became president, he asked me to come back on because he was familiar. We had a good working relationship, and this is where it comes down to. And I'm in charge. This is what we know about what's going on. We know that President Trump was shot in the ear, right ear. We all saw that on video by an individual from a, and I'm not going to use the name, from a rooftop. This is what we know. What we don't know is how exactly he got up there, if he had help, and a whole bunch of other details. We just don't know it. We're doing investigation here. We're going to get to the bottom of this, and when we're done with the investigation, we're going to get back to you. Well, Ms. Cheadle, what about X, Y, and Z? Well, we have all different reports out there. We have a lot of information out there. No, we have to review our procedures. We need to go out there, review what happened, what went wrong here, and everything else. And by the way, this is what we do all the time. Anytime that there's any type of security lapse, anytime that there's any type of problem, we do an investigation. We go out there and we improve. And what we're hoping for is to learn what happened, improve on what we're doing. And so this does not happen again. We do have some preliminary information that it was a security issue. We do not give out security details on anything related to president or any other people we have to be in charge of. So that's all I have, and when more information becomes available, we're going to come out there, and we're going to deliver it to you. Thank you very much. Have a great day, and God bless America. Guess what? Done. That's what you do. Now, this may sound hindsight being 2020. However, with my clients, this is the script that I have pre-written. You have to plan this stuff out ahead of time. You cannot wait until something happens to say, oh, let's go and get the yellow legal pad, or, let's go get the right in the rain pad, and let's look that up and see what we're going to, what are we going to say? You're already in crisis mode. People are already scrutinizing you. You got to go, whether you're going to have a small mom and pop construction company or if you're in a multinational company, you have to have your groove known together, and you got to go out and be prepared. That's what the moral of the story is here. I'm not going to come on the air and criticize this person until I know what the hell is going on here with it. What happened? What are the facts? Because this is what happens. She may end up resigning tomorrow over this whole thing, and guess what? Now she's not available. So if you're an investigator, you're not available anymore. I don't know what the rules are here for the Secret Service, but this is not what you want to do. And the other thing is this. She might not be at fault here. And again, blame fixes nothing. There might be something else on here. How do we know that there is not? And I'm not going to peddle conspiracy theories. How do we know this is not a foreign agent that did this? How do we know that this is not an inside job? How do we know that this person worked alone? Might have had some help. Don't know. Let's find out, and then we'll figure out what's going on then and there. Now, and that being said, that's our public face. Privately, whatever they're going to do, they have to do stuff that's, you know, appropriate and internally, hey, preliminary reports and things of that nature. Why are they discussing this in the open, right? Why are they giving information to our enemies that might be used against us? Now, so another thing I'd like to say here. Yes, I was in the neighborhood of Bedminster. I shot a little video. We got to stop with the rhetoric here. They got to cool this down. Sit down with a nice cup of coffee. Banana cream coffee. Delicious. And we got to stop with the rhetoric. We got to stop demonizing each other. We got to get along. Like, you have to say something like Rodney King said, and it became a joke for a long time in the 90s. Can't we all just get along? We have to get along here. This is not good. Now I will get conspiratorial. There are people, organizations, and groups that want to have a competitive advantage with us globally, and we know who they are. Right? It's obvious. Different countries, different organizations, and everything. We are going right into what they want to do here. When we're at each other's throats, that puts everybody else at a competitive advantage, and there's money in chaos. Why are we feeding into this? A lot of reasons. Everyone could say this. A lot of the reason is that when we have good people that want to run for president, they get destroyed. That's part of what the problem is. And I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or any other political party. Good people get destroyed. So what comes in? The people who really don't give a darn. And this is what we get, the cast of characters here that we have. So it is what it is. I mean, I worked on several presidential campaigns. That's been my experience, and Senate campaigns and things of that nature. That's my experience. Good people get destroyed. This is why we have this. That's why I say, let's go find out what happened with this and everything else. Now, this all feeds into our next story. And I have a little story here. It's a little bit funny here. I think it's funny, at least. Not too many other people think it's funny. So we have the local senator here in New Jersey, Bob Menendez. Now, just for the record, I lived in New Jersey for many years. I worked on the Murray Savrin campaign. Murray was a guest on here, and he had run against, I believe, Bob Menendez on the last Senate run and a couple of other things. I might be wrong on that, but I did work on a campaign that was against Senator Menendez, maybe when he was running for Congress, right, for the low House of Representatives. But anyway, so there's complete disclosure here. Now, the last time he had a mistrial, and that was there was a mistrial. They weren't able to convict him. This time he really got convicted, and evidence by all accounts, and I'm not an attorney, I don't play one on TV, was overwhelming. So anyway, my mother used to have a parade. My mom died last year. A parade going down in front of her house, the St. Patrick's and the Christmas parade for Woodbridge, New Jersey. And I was there up until 2023, right, was the last parade I went through. And then with that, you know, and missed the Christmas parade last year. Now the house is gone. But anyway, sold. Anyway, Senator Menendez, after he beats the trial, he's walking, right? And, they, you know, the politicians come up front, and everybody's there, yeah, USA. And, you know, the mayor is going, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? How are the kids? And, you know, I got, you know, the local fire commission, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Hey, your kids are getting mad. You know, and everybody's, you know, it's festive. And there's Senator Menendez. And everyone's looking at it like he's a pariah or something, you know, give me the plate. And I start, hey, Senator, how you doing? Hey, and he's waving because I'm like the only one waving to him. I said, you really showed them in court, didn't you? You beat them in court. You got off those charges. Yeah. And then he started looking straight ahead. Like, oh, little did he know the politicians behind him were laughing their asses off. But anyway, my wife was like, shut up. But I couldn't resist that one. So that's my little Senator Menendez thing. Now, he's going to appeal. There are some people calling for his resignation. There's reports that he plans on resigning in the next couple of hours, right, or days with this. Now, I'm going to say this, and okay, this is a little bit partisan here, right? If New Jersey did not have a Democratic governor, right, a Democratic governor, I don't think that he would be resigning. The reason being is under the original Constitution of the United States, the only persons that were elected on the federal level to federal office, directly elected, were lower house Congress people, House of Representatives, right? During the Progressive Era, I believe it was the 17th Amendment to the Constitution. Don't quote me on that one. They made for direct popular election of the Senate, the federal Senate. I believe, hindsight being 2020, this was a mistake because prior to that amendment, their legislatures got together, right, in each state and appointed a senator. This way, the legislature had a say in that. Not the way it is direct now. And, whatever. People can disagree with you. It's okay to disagree. We're not going back. That's for damn sure on this. So now, as a holdover from that, the governor, and every state has a different process, I believe, the governor appoints someone to be senator. And normally that is from the governor's own party. So if we, so right now the Senate is 51 and 49, right, in Democrats' favor. If a Republican got appointed to that seat by the governor, which is not going to happen, it's a Democratic governor, then it would be a 50-50 split with the tiebreaker going to the president of the Senate, a.k.a. Vice President Harris, right? So that's the way that works. So don't think that their calling for his resignation is all out of virtue. Because I tell you what, if another party had the governorship of New Jersey, the Republican Party would have it, he would not be resigning. That's my analysis there. Just the way it is. Now, just before airtime, it came across at 6:13 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So a little under 2 hours, that President Biden tested positive for COVID and canceled his speech in Vegas, and he had been struggling, it looked like to me, going up the stairs with that, and I just want to wish him a speedy recovery. Now, with that, and I hope things work out fine for him. Now, this is what I'm disappointed in with this whole thing. Not that I'm going back and backtracking here. I'm a little bit disappointed with the reaction of some of my friends on social media. All right. As we previously discussed back in March with all February, March with all the protests at the universities, I had said, well, look, these are your, no, the college students here are putting their future in jeopardy. And I'll be polite about it because they're going out and they are protesting the war in Israel on behalf of the Palestinians and everything else. And they're making a lot of bad things. And no, there were professional protesters that were egging them on. And so they may not be able to recover from this situation, right? Being thrown out of school, failing out of school, doing this. They're the ones paying the price ultimately for this. Now, I was roundly criticized by a lot of listeners by that. I was supported by a lot of listeners. In the end, I was proven right because a lot of those people got thrown out of school. And those protesters, a lot of them paid, not there. Now, all right, here we have this situation, and we're going to hear it now from people on the right about President Biden and his illness, just like we heard about President Trump with the assassination attempt. There are celebrities out there that were happy over this situation, just like there's going to be people who are happy Joe Biden is sick. All right? We don't wish anybody ill will here at all. None. All right? You don't want to go down that road because it adds fuel to the fire and you get the situation like we had on Saturday. I can't say shocked. I'm just really surprised that people are making jokes about President Trump and gleeful on that whole situation. Some of them are disappointed. Right? You could go and look those up and that and those reactions. I'm really disappointed that I know people who would do something like that. And what you should be concerned about is this. What people in your organization, if you're a safety professional, have that attitude towards human life that they're hoping people die? Because right now, if they're thinking that about, whether you're president or either candidate here, what are they doing with their decisions at work? If you don't value human life, what kind of decision are you going to be making when you're dealing with life and death decisions or assessing risk in the safety field? We have people, and, I met with people, right? I came out with my 10 things, right, that Jim Poles learned. Here are the 10 things. Jim's 32 years, right? One of the things was, if people do not value human life, you cannot and will not get them to, what you're saying isn't going to change them in all likelihood. If they don't value human life, we got people here, I've had clients tell me, I don't give a shit if someone falls off the building. We'll just hire somebody else. I've had people do it. They're not clients anymore because that's a little bit too high liability. So what? I'm not giving them PPE. Screw them. I'm not giving them respirators. Let them breathe silica dust. What do I give a shit? I heard that recently, too. Right? And people don't believe me. Well, guess what? The same people who are saying that, it's the same ilk of people that are taking glee in someone who almost got murdered on live TV. Someone now, I'm sure, that is going to be saying that, Biden is sick, ha, 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 maybe, blah, 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 blah. This is not right. This is not good. Here. to be, wishing people ill will here. That's not good. That's not good for society. That you're not going to win the safety war here. So that's what I have to say on that with this thing also. Now, yesterday, and as my introduction says, parts of the story, but yesterday we were a little bit part of the story here with what went on. So I'm sitting, I'm in New York City, taking care of business, doing my thing, and I hear it, like 11 o'clock, 11:15, I said, man, what, are they flying the Concorde again? I said, man, that, No, that's loud, right? I'm going, and I hear this, right, come over Manhattan, and it turns out it was a meteor. I was like, son of a gun. You talk about not being able to, and then there was a loud pop, right? You talk about not being able not being prepared for something. Now, to my knowledge, right? This is moving. Here's what NASA said here. Right, daylight fireball over New York City this morning at 11:17. Okay, that's right. Right, local media are reporting the sighting of a fireball and booms and shakings between 10 a.m. and noon Eastern Daylight Time today. There have also been a few reports filed on the American Meteor Society website that have determination and trajectory. The thing went right up the Hudson River here is from what they said. No meteorites were produced by this event. There are reports of military activity in the vicinity around the time of the fireball, which would explain multiple shakings and ground and sounds reported to the media, right? And everything else. But, I remember one of the, my brother and I were fishing right outside of JFK Airport there back in the mid-80s, right, in the Raritan Bay on the Sandy Hook side of the Raritan Bay. And, the Concorde came over us and that, the rumbling and everything else. This is what this sounded like. So it was pretty loud. Now, this was the second time, the last time I had seen a shooting star and it actually popped exploded was in about 1986 where I was walking my dog in Woodbridge, New Jersey, and this happened at night. I was with my mother during the summer and we heard a pop and we saw, she said, man, that was a shooting star. And I said, yeah, wow, pretty cool. This year, between this incident and another one earlier this year, I believe it was March, this is twice in 1 year I've seen this. So this is like really an astronomical treat for me. And with that and the eclipse of, right a couple months back, really a thing. Now, the one in earlier this year, I was at the Boy Scout camp here in northern New Jersey, Alpine. And as we discussed on the program, we had two scout members horrifically murdered at the end of last year for the crew, the Morgan family. The younger Morgan was on my son's baseball team and I was assistant coach. So we knew the family and they were murdered by the father and the mother also, who committed suicide, and the mother also. So it hit the international papers and everything. It was a horrific situation. So we were having a slight memorial service and one of the scouts, Boy Scouts. And yeah, you it's like you sing, you have the sing along and things around the campfire and things of that nature. So one of their songs that they sing is traditional for the troop is Starlight, Starbright, the first star I see tonight. I wish I may, I wish I might. And it goes on and on and on. And it's a longer song. So we had just finished the song. A meteorite comes over, a shooting star comes over the camp and pops. Boom. Eerie feeling. So, again, we were almost part of the story. Now, what do we learn with this? You got to be prepared for disasters. Now, You look at what's going on in Austin, Texas, over the last 8 days after with the power outages, and they're out there for 8 days, some people, without power. Now it's under 10,000 people without power. Yesterday it was still at like 200,000 people, but they got power restored here for the most part. That's probably 10,000 people without power all the time, no matter where you are. Right, there's power outages for many different reasons. Now, you don't know when you're going to have a disaster. This is what it goes for. What do you need to be prepared for? 3 days worth of food and water is what the government tells you. We're going to have more about this in September, and you may want to go back to every September we've had this. We talked about disasters. So you got to be prepared. You don't know when this is going to hit, something like this. Smaller situation here in New Jersey, where up in Newton, where I own some real estate up there, I got a call on this morning and a text message that they were planning. Actually, no, I got it yesterday. Hey, they're going to be working on water. You're going to have a drop in pressure and everything else, blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. Well, today I get a thing. Well, there's not going to be a drop in pressure, and there's not going to be a problem because somebody on the, and I don't know why they said this, somebody on the team on the work detail is sick and they're not doing work today. So I was like, pardon me. I was like, okay, why are you telling us that? Just telling us that we're not going to have a water outage today would have probably been a little bit more appropriate there. So that's what I had. Just be prepared with this. And apparently a lot of houses went on the market yesterday with these power outages around Austin because people, I know at least three families from my town that moved to Austin, Texas, here because it's a big up-and-coming city. So now there's a lot of houses went up for sale yesterday because people want to get out of there. Now, something else I just came across today, cyanide found in blood of Bangkok hotel victims. So cyanide has found in the blood of all six people who died in a luxury hotel suite in Bangkok, say doctors after examining their bodies. And they're, based on initial postmortem examination, they said there is no other cause that would explain their death except cyanide. Well, I wonder what's going on over there. I mean, imagine that. My wife being an event and meeting planner, she's like, this is not nice. This is not good. Another story here. American towns are rebelling against mega mansions. And basically now, this is a local story here, but it's a nationwide story where this is out of East Hampton, New York. The story is on from Wall Street Journal here. Writer is E.B. Solomont. And basically, towns are now striking back against these mega mansions. Some of them in that town are going for 20,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet. And it's huge. If you go and you look in any of these, like they do the houses, like these magazines, they used to have a thing called a magazine rack. And it used to be like on and when checkout when people used to go to supermarkets to go food shopping, and there would be this rack with magazines. And you'd get the National Enquirer and all these other gossip rags, and everything was all, outlandish type things in there before the internet, before Instagram and TikTok. And they'd have like a celebrity home issue. And you look at the celebrity homes, and I tell you what, the celebrity homes were only like 5,000, 8,000 square feet. Weren't really big homes. And now we're talking, it's commonplace for 5,000, 10,000 square foot homes. And people are getting a little bit sick of them. It destroys a town. The other thing is this, with these big mega mansions, local emergency responders might not be capable of might not be capable of managing these things in an emergency. So that's something else you need to consider with them. Let's see. Was there anything else today with this? All right. No, nothing else more. So we're going to go, and we're going to go to our commercial break here, and because I need it after that, 45 minutes straight talking, we're going to need a break, and we'll go here.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe? Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1 of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive. Monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Posel and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents. Conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
Okay, for some reason, this... Oh. Okay, for some reason, the audio cut out on that. Okay. Bear with me here. And let's hit play. Still can't get these videos on here working here. So let's see here. Share screen.
Years of lessons learned. That is what he has had a front row seat for over 3 decades to the world of workplace safety and health. He's seen the good, the bad, and everything in between. And let me tell you, he's had a wild ride. Now, he's not here to preach or point fingers. Here is some hard-earned practical wisdom he has earned over the years. This isn't about textbooks or regulations. It's about real-world experience, the kind you get from getting your hands dirty in the trenches. So buckle up, grab a wrench, and get ready for Jim Posel's top 10 lessons from 32 years in HSE. Let's do this. Define the dang job. Look, before you even think about safety, you gotta know what you're responsible for. What are your duties? What's your authority? Get it in writing, in black and white, in your employment contract. Can you hire? Can you fire? Can you discipline someone? Can you implement change? Knowing this stuff is crucial. It protects you legally, plain and simple. It's like having the right tool for the job. You can't fix a leaky pipe with a hammer. And hey, if you gotta step outside your lane to help somebody out, do it. But know your boundaries first. It's about covering your backside and doing the right thing. Document and report, no exceptions. Let me tell you something. If someone tells you not to do your job, especially if it involves safety, you document it. Write it down, send an email, whatever it takes. And if it's serious, report it. Especially if it's coming from someone higher up the food chain. Remember, even a written order doesn't absolve you of your responsibilities. And a written one can't be negated by a verbal one. Safety first, always. And if they try to retaliate, well, OSHA's got your back with those whistleblower protections. This ain't about being a snitch. It's about protecting yourself and your coworkers. Documentation is your friend, folks. Remember that. Don't sweat the small stuff. Find the humor. To not take yourself too seriously. A little humor goes a long way in easing tensions and building relationships. Some people get so wound up, so focused on the rules that they forget to be human. Don't be that guy. Crack a joke, share a laugh. Yourself, it makes it a lot harder for others to get under your skin. Now, before you go off on a crusade, ask yourself this. Is this my business? If it's not, walk away. If it is, ask yourself why. Are you the right person to address it? Do you have a constructive approach? Sometimes the best thing you can do is stay out of it. Don't go looking for trouble. It'll find you soon enough. But when it's your time to step up, do it with purpose and a plan. Let's be real clear. If an organization doesn't value human life, they sure as heck won't value worker safety. No matter how hard you try, it's like trying to teach a pig to sing. It's a waste of your time and it annoys the pig. People first, always. That's the bottom line. If a company's not on board with that, you might want to start looking for a new gig. It has been said before, and it bears repeating. If a company's breaking OSHA regulations, chances are they're breaking other employment laws too. It's like a roach motel. You find one. You know there's a whole family hiding nearby. Be thorough, be vigilant. Don't let them get away with cutting corners. OSHA's there for a reason to protect workers. Use it. Kill them with kindness. You know, sometimes non-compliance ain't about malice. It's about wrong training, wrong directions, and being told the wrong thing by so-called experts. People just don't know any better or have perverse incentive structures. That's where you come in. Work with them. They are the experts in their jobs and know how to get the job done. Treat them with respect. You are more likely to have a safer work environment working together. Explain why safety standards are important and work with them to make the workplace safer. Antagonizing rarely works. Shaming, blaming, retraining, pain for pain. None of this works and makes the workplace more unsafe. Whatever you do, do it with respect, with kindness, and understanding. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar, right? Don't come in guns blazing. You'll just put them on the defensive. Be a teacher, a mentor, a colleague, a friend, not a tyrant. Look, nobody likes to be called out in front of their peers. It just breeds resentment and hostility. If you gotta have a difficult conversation with someone, do it privately and document it. Always document it. It protects you and keeps them accountable. Remember, this ain't about throwing anyone under the bus. It's about addressing issues head on and finding solutions. Do it the right way, with respect and discretion. This line of work can beat you down, no doubt, but you gotta find a way to stay positive, to keep your chin up, not just for your own sanity, but for your career too. A positive attitude is contagious. It rubs off on people. And you know what? It drives the negative Nancys, especially the psychopathic types, absolutely crazy. So smile, be optimistic, and watch the naysayers squirm. This one's simple. If someone's acting foolish and is out of control with routine yelling, screaming, intimidation, and just acting like an idiot, document it. Workplace violence is never okay, and it's your responsibility to report it. Create a culture where people feel safe speaking up, where they know they'll be heard. And if someone's struggling, offer support. Remember, mental health is just as important as physical health. Let's look out for each other. Look, these are some of the things that I learned from Jim. He has shared some hard-won lessons with us. He has learned them for over 32 years in the trenches. And if there's one thing he wants you to do with all this, make a difference. Speak up for those who can't. Fight for what's right. And never, ever compromise on safety. Go out there, be the change you want to see, and make the world a safer place, one workplace at a time. And remember, one man can make a difference. Where can you get this and many other lessons? It's on Safety Wars, available on your favorite podcast platform and on video platforms like YouTube under Safety Wars. You can always go to safetywars.com. He is also on Jay Allen's Safety FM network at safetyfm.com. He also offers safety training in a variety of subjects like OSHA outreach classes, 10 or 30 hour, Haswelper, and many others. Give him a call at 845-269-5772 or Jim at safetywars.com.
So we're back. What did you think, huh? We're getting better. So we'll be coming out with some more videos and snippets like that. I don't know what to call them. Some would call them memes. Now, that was on some of our social media this week, this past week. Anyway. Let me turn off the Safety FM. Anyway, don't ever turn it off. For you. That's for me to turn off. A lot of stuff going out there with OSHA here over the last couple of days here. This came out yesterday out of Seattle. The U.S. Department of Labor has obtained a consent judgment from the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington in Tacoma. That includes a landmark injunction that permanently prevents the U.S. Postal Service from retaliating against employees at up to 59 locations. Issued on July 3rd, the consent judgment follows an investigation by OSHA, which found the USPS had again violated the provision of OSHA that protects employees against retaliation, also known as 29 CFR 1977. Right, after three separate investigations, OSHA concluded USPS improperly fired three probationary workers in East Vancouver, Seattle, and Tacoma after they reported workplace injuries. In turn, the department's office of the solicitor filed suit against the agency, alleging violations of the OSHA Act's anti-retaliation provision. I don't know. I can't say I'm shocked here. With that, that was the big story from OSHA today, and we'll go over some accidents and everything tomorrow with our normal fanfare, unless something else happens. I don't know. This was a little bit different. We went into a little bit of politics, but I think we had to. And the bottom line here is this. We all have to get along. We are going to be covering some other issues over the next, in the very near future here. We're putting stuff together for it even as we speak. It's just longer-term type stuff that we have to plan out for with this. And you know, part of the safety war is not only that industrial safety. It's not only environmental safety, but it's also safety, psychological safety built into there. It's also safety dealing with everything else as far as who's in your corner, international issues, international politics, sovereignty, the right to rule ourselves. I mean, there was a story out of Great Britain this week about all of the cars now in the U.S. And the EU having speed delimiting software on that. We all learned what happened during COVID, where we took people's agency away from them on how to protect them and their family from COVID. People are going nuts. We're still dealing with a lot of fallout from that whole decision there and all those other decisions. So something to consider here. So we're going to close out here, and I will see you tomorrow here. And here, where's our outro here? Hold on. You have an intro, you gotta have an outro.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.